Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. My name is Karuna and I'm coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual epicenter of the universe. It is exactly 38 minutes past 9 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and today is the 23rd of April 2015. Dear listeners, we are hours away from a very intensely and deeply important day in the Sai calendar. It was on 24th of April 2011 that Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba left the physical body and assumed his cosmic form as the all-pervading consciousness. This day, the Aradhana Day, has a very special personal significance for each of us. Today on Morning Glory, our Aradhana Day special has a number of voices from all over the world who are among thousands who continue to flock to Prashanthi Nilayam each day, many of them making it their home. This morning, I will play for you the voices of these devotees that I recorded just yesterday, and you will hear directly from each of them as to what it is that draws them to Prashanthi Nilayam even today, and what Aradhana Day means to them. These Aradhana Day reflections will be followed by part two of Mr. Venugopal's FMLM. So please have a listen.
Om Jai Sai Ram, my humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of our Lord, Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. My name is Angela Dixon. In this life, I was born in Scotland, United Kingdom. 15 years ago, I was called by the Lord, my Master, my all, to Mother India. First to Calcutta to heal a past life trauma, and then on to Prashanthi Nilayam to experience the grace and blessings of the Lord in His manifested physical form. Having known and experienced the subtle form in Scotland, I remain in Puttaparthi, which is now my home. Because of His divine will, my Lord brought me home in order that I may complete my sadhana and return to Him for good, having finished with the cycle of birth and death and having done with all desires. Aradhana Day, to me, is a day of reflection and a great blessing from our Lord Sai. Having dropped the form, we His devotees now are enabled to know the formless One without a second, to go within our hearts and find Him there where He has always been, the indweller of every being. In dropping the physical form, it has allowed me to feel and experience the supreme energy still guiding, loving, and teaching in order that we may all find our way home to be with Him in the supreme abode. Aradhana Day is a day of reflection for me, reflecting on the example and teachings of the Lord. Love all, serve all, help ever, heart never. I am striving to put these divine teachings into daily practice. Jai Sai Ram.
Om Shri Sai Ram. My name is Sato Inagaki. I am Japanese and from Japan. My profession is music. I graduated from music college with clarinet and playing piano is my hobby since my childhood. Now I'm staying here about 2.5 years. My first visit to Puttaparthi was 1995 on Swami's birthday. But while I was coming with Japanese group in 2012 at Buddha Purnima, I decided to stay Puttaparthi because when Swami's body was here, I could not feel the greatness of India. But at this time in Buddha Purnima, I felt something different. That, oh, how interesting and wonderful place India is. And also some coincidences happened for me. So I decided to come to Puttaparthi. After that, I left everything in Japan and come back to Puttaparthi after 2 months. At first, I didn't know what to do and how to live, where to live. But each one of steps, Swami guided me through many people. And also Swami gave me a chance to share my music skill and experiences with Sai student, boys and girls, with both of my music instrument, clarinet and piano. How compassionate Swami is. I could not have this much of happiness and joy and Swami's near and dearness when I was in Japan. So my second life started here in Puttaparthi, I felt. Of course, some small problems, feeling up and down are coming, but I'm satisfied staying here very much. This is priceless experiences. I really appreciate to Swami and I want to stay here as long as possible. Finally, what Aradhana Day means to me is wake up call. Like, wake up, I am here in you and around you. I have to remember this each one of a moment in my daily life. But this day reminds me again and again strongly. I'm here in you and around you. Thank you very much. Jai Sairam.
Sairam, I'm Isha Narayanan from Pune, Maharashtra, India. I offer my salutations to the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, my guru and my dear friend. My first visit to Prashanthi Nilayam was 16 years ago, when I was 11, and the visit was indeed surreal. Swami had been the god in our altar, and in my childish indifference I took it for granted that he was the most important member of the house, and we have to pray to him when in trouble. So when I first saw him, I felt very strange. The image in our altar was walking, talking, blessing and loving everyone, right in front of our eyes. This divine sight made me shed tears almost instantaneously. No words were exchanged between us. He didn't even come where I was seated. Yet I felt he knew I was there, and my heart felt very happy. I returned to Prashanthi after a long gap, a month before Baba's Mahasamadhi. The only thing that changed about Swami was his physical appearance, while I had undergone changes in all possible levels. He remained the embodiment of purity, and my mind had become Kurukshetra. Luckily, I was seated in the front row. When he came in his chariot, that is his car, all thoughts ceased. As the car approached us slowly, I saw his head turn towards us, and then our eyes met. That was my Krishna Arjun moment. In the thick Mahashivaratri crowd, it was just me and him. That was the turning point of my life. In retrospect, I can say I was reborn in Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami, in his silence, accepted me as a disciple and initiated me into a spiritual life. From that day onwards, the Gita is being sung through his divine grace continuously, every moment in the form of a new experience, teaching me a new lesson every single day. From a dear family member The relationship was now of a guru and a shishya. The day Swami took samadhi was indeed difficult for all who adored him in their hearts. Even though he willed my staying away from his physical form, I relied on his formless presence, yet I felt shattered and orphaned. By his divine grace, the grief did not last long, and I started frequenting Prashanti with the same conviction that my guru was here. My connection towards Swami deepened since his samadhi. He was being gracious in showing me what all I have to let go of in order to further strengthen this bond. He gave me the opportunity to purify myself by giving me a rare opportunity of volunteering in Radio Sai. He also became a disciplinarian when I needed to be corrected. Aradhana Day, therefore, is a day of complete surrender for me. Though I am far from it, I know this is His will and He is giving me the right experiences for it. Swami always said it is the purity of intention that matters in any activity undertaken. And Prashanti Nilayam is built by Him, so you can imagine the level of purity of this fortunate place. Every brick laid here is suffused with His divine love. Not only did He choose to stay here, but He brought many here in the form of curious visitors, spiritual seekers, devotees, pilgrims and students in His educational institutions and transformed them completely. I read somewhere that the Lord, His abode and His name are one and the same. There is no difference. Prashanti Nilayam is verily Swami. If the world is God, then Prashanti Nilayam is the heart. The Hriday Nivasi chose to stay here for 85 glorious years and continues to stay here and transform. As to why I keep coming back, I can only say, home is where the heart is. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, I bow to Sai Baba. I'm Sharon Wajnow. I'm from the United States of America. I'm a retired homebound school teacher. And my first trip was in 1976, a long time ago. What's the reason that I come here? Well, after Baba passed, we came in June, and I was sitting in Darshan line, and I was given a vision of Prema Sai, so strong, so powerful, that it was totally imprinted in my mind, and it's all I could think about. But the story starts way before that. In 1990, when we had built a house in Virginia, we were laying a brick floor, and while we were doing that, I heard a voice, and the voice said, "This house is for someone else." And I said, "Swami, we just bought the house for somebody else?" Uh-oh. At the time, I had forgotten, I wasn't thinking, that in the 1980s, I had asked Swami in Darshan line, "Can I come and live in India?" And Swami said, "Later, not now." Okay. So let's jump now to 2013. We decided to sell our house, and I was walking in the kitchen, and I heard a voice, and the voice simply said, "You will sell your house in 2 weeks." And I said, "Swami, how is that possible? We just lost our broker. I don't know anything about selling a house. Help." Okay. So we decided to look on the internet. Can we learn something quick? Can we find another broker? Well, within 1 week, my mother, mind you, who's in a wheelchair, has dementia, hardly ever communicates with us. She's not altogether there. She doesn't like Swami. She doesn't like me going to India. She says to me, "You will sell your house in 1 week." And I said, "Mom, how do you know?" And she simply said, "He who tells you things told me." And I was shocked. My husband was there, Len, and we're just like, "Huh? Well, Swami does it again." In 1 week, the house was sold. Not only was it sold, the people who bought the house, their broker, their lawyer, did all the paperwork for us, and as well as the people who bought it, and they became our friends, which is one of the things that I really wanted. And those people were so nice that they allowed us to stay in the house for another 3 months. Okay, so we left. Everything worked out. We left the United States. We came here. And one of the most beautiful things that Bob arranged was here we're pushing my mother in a wheelchair. We're at the immigrations. We go up, and they look at us, and they go, the most important thing for you to do is take care of your mother. And, like, we're getting a lecture on this, and, like, this has got to be God. So, actually, when we go through the gates where you're supposed to check your luggage, they're like, go. Goodbye. Just go. So they didn't really check anything, only a few items that were hand luggage. And we had a lot of boxes. Okay. So the reason I came in India right now is mainly because I'm waiting for Premasai. And what does Swami Samadhi Day mean to me? Well, actually, I'm not happy. I'm sad about it because I remember the beautiful leelas that we had together, the beautiful experiences I had on the physical plane with Swami. And it all comes back up. And it's a recall. And now I'm forced to rely on the inner for reinsurance, the visions, the seeing Bob on the astral and the etheric. Even though Bob has trained me on that since I've known Swami, it's still a much harder route to take. I'll give you one example. When I was in Darshan Line, when Swami was walking, Swami came along, and I looked at Swami. I said, thank you for your body, Swami, but I want to see you. And the next second, oh, it was total beauty, total energy, such a vibration, I cannot describe it. And I said, that's you. Oh, God, beautiful. But it's still a harder realm. And all I can say is I miss him. Thank you.
Sai Ram, Baba, Sai Ram, everyone. I'm Terry Reese Kennedy, and I'm born in a little village in Vermont. It sets down by a beautiful river and mountains, and it's the sweetest place that anyone can ever come from. I traveled the world quite a bit. I was fortunate as a poet and investigative journalist. And one day in Laguna Beach, California, I heard someone talking about a guru, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And I thought to my great self, oh, these pathetic people that have to have gurus. They can't think of anything for themselves. Well, guess what? Shortly after that, I was living in New Zealand. I had received a fellowship for my writing to Australia, and then as a gift to go to New Zealand. And it's a very foresty, quiet, incredible country. And there I had quite a few very strange experiences for a practical journalist like myself. And I came back to Laguna Beach, and I saw this photo of Swami in someone's truck. It was a sticker on the dashboard. And I said, who is that guy? Because I thought he was a Maori. This picture was a Maori because the Maoris have the big hair and the nice little tan and the round face. So the man said to me, a Maori? I said, yes, from New Zealand. He said, no, that is Sai Baba. And a terribly frightening thing happened to me. When he said the word Sai Baba, it was as though someone had kicked me, not hit me, right at my heart. And I jumped and I said, what is he? Because I had never had that experience. And he said, he is an avatar. And in my greatness and my great world traveling, I had never heard the word avatar. And I certainly wasn't going to let anybody know that I didn't know the meaning. So later I looked it up and I read, when God comes to earth in a human form. And I thought, well, that's just some Hindu thing. Well, it was just a matter of weeks later that I was selling everything to be able to get a ticket to come to India and see this Maori who kicked me in the heart. And when I arrived here, I was very, very frightened. I planned to stay for 4 weeks. And I have been here ever since. That was in 1990. I do have to go out because of the requirements of our visa. And I know why he kicked me in the heart. And he kicked me in the heart. He removed lots of barbed wire that was around that heart. And I fell in love with life again. It was as though I had been blind and deaf and everything else. And I had always wanted to be happy. I thought Swami will magically make me happy. It didn't happen like that. But I believe that today, 25 years later, I won't find anybody happier than me. I'm so grateful for all his blessings within myself, my family, my friends. And I think of this special day as Memorial Day and Thanksgiving. It is like, how can we ever stop singing the praises? I don't sing, but saying in gratitude what Swami has provided for me. First of all, a woman alone in India, he's protected me every step of the way. I have everything that I need by his grace and his grace only. The relationships with my family members, which were very damaged, are healed. My mother came to accept that I was not doing some demonic thing coming to India and having a guru. And my siblings, my children, my grandchildren. And I don't think I can say any more because I'll just burst into tears. Swami, thank you for my life. Thank you for everything and everything that you give us every single day. I'm very, very happy.
Sai Ram, my name is Aarti and I'm from Canada. The question that's being asked is, what draws you to Prashanthi Nilayam? Or what does Prashanthi Nilayam mean to you? And I would say it's changed over the years. It's evolved. Prashanthi Nilayam has been first my home, second my playground, and I think third my classroom and my workshop. My home in the sense that I grew up in the Western world. I was a teenager. I came to Swami when I was 16. Of course, I knew Swami since I was born, but physically meeting Bhagwan when I was 16. I came from a culture where teenagers often partied a lot, went out a lot, drank a lot for fun in the West. But I knew that there had to be something more than that. There was an inner knowing that there has to be a happiness more than just partying and doing what my classmates were doing. And I came to Bharti when I was 16, and as I said, I would say that Prashanthi Nilayam became my home because I met Swami, and at that time I felt finally I fit in somewhere. When I was living in the West, I felt I couldn't identify with the people around me, at least with my classmates, because the joy that they were experiencing was not the joy that I was experiencing. And when I came to Bharti, I met Swami, and he became he already was my divine mother, my father, my best friend, and I felt finally I fit in somewhere. And tasting him was tasting something I've never tasted before. It was a joy that I never experienced before. So I fit in and I felt at home. I felt I'd finally come home. And after that, my first trip in 1996, I ended up coming every year after that for the next 18 years. Over that time, those 18 years, Bhagwan also created an environment where it was a playground for me, where I got to wake up every morning at 2 in the morning, get ready, and come to see him in darshan. It was seeing the love of your life, your best friend, every day and waking up with that same zeal and joy. I ran every day. I ran after him when he drove in the car. I waited outside his house to see in case if he walked from one end of the hall to the other. We spent hours not eating, just waiting in the sun, but that was all worth it. And as a teenager, most of my friends back home thought I was crazy to do all of that. But I couldn't really explain to them the joy that gave, that seeing this, one would call just a person in an orange robe with an afro, could give so much joy. And I couldn't explain to them that this was God, that this was something so much more. And I wanted to share with them, and I would share with them. Most of my friends were Greek Orthodox, and they mostly knew Jesus Christ. But I tried to explain to them in their terms about how I experienced Swami. And after that, I don't know what it was like for the Gopikas to be with Krishna, but I can imagine that's what it was like with me and my group of friends that used to come every year to Prashanthi Nilayam to be with Swami and experience him every moment. But as I came to Puttaparthi, I began coming only for a few weeks, then 2 months, then 4 months, then 6 months. And then since 2007, I've been pretty much here for most of the year, either 6 months to a year, and now 2 years, then 3 years. And over that time, from Puttaparthi being, or Prashanthi Nilayam being a home, to a playground where I played with Bhagwan, it became a place that was really, I would say, a classroom or a workshop for me, because it began a process of a lot of spiritual churning. I would say that over the time, both the best qualities in me came out, but also I was able to see the worst of me come out also. I find that being in Bhagavan's presence, he makes you very aware of what your drawbacks are, or your negative qualities, or vasanas became very apparent to me also, which was a great learning lesson for me. I was able to see where my ego or my anger or jealousy and all these qualities began to surface, especially in darshan and outside of darshan. And I began a process of a lot of self-inquiry and began to understand who am I and where am I going with my life. And it's been a workshop since then, reading Bhagwan's books, sitting in darshan, meditating, doing my Vedam, but also now taking it to the new level where I'm really wondering, who am I really and where am I going in this life? I remember a couple had asked Swami in an interview, what is the greatest service we can do to humanity? And Bhagwan explained, he said, the greatest service to humanity? And they said, yes, Swami, the greatest service to humanity. And Bhagwan replied, transform yourself, transformation of the self. And I never really understood that when I heard it many years back. But slowly, as the years unfold, I'm beginning to understand that it requires a lot of self-reflection, a lot of practice. And the practice never ends. Until you die, you're going to keep practicing. And so I've been working on it, slowly but surely, and just working on myself every day. In terms of Aradhana Day and what Aradhana Day means to me, I was looking up the word Aradhana because, to be honest, I didn't know what Aradhana meant. And I learned that it means worship, and worship to the Lord or worship to God. And for me, I was thinking worship, I think we're at a time in this stage after Bhagwan left his body, at least my feeling, is taking that idea of worship and seeing if we can actually begin to worship the divinity within each person we meet. And I think that's something I've been reflecting on in this past week. And I've been asking myself, Aarti, are you actually being able to see, or making the effort to see the divine in everybody else? Because that's what Swami represented. That was his life, that was his message. And am I beginning to take my master's words and putting it into practice? And to celebrate him or celebrate Aradhana Day for me would be taking that one fundamental teaching of beginning to see him in everything and every creation and try to put it more and more into practice. So for me, Aradhana Day would represent that. Sai Ram. Thank you.
Sai Ram. of Sisayam. My name is Sala. I live from Japan and Punjab. And I love Buddha Bhakti because I have so many aunties and uncles who love me. And Swami also. I love you, Swami. Sairam, thank you.
Sairam, my name is Kimiko from Japan. I have been living in Puttaparthi for 5 years. Prashanti Nilayam, for me, it is like a Vaikuntha. Whenever people from Japan send email, they won't say how's Puttaparthi, they'll say how's Vaikuntha. That's how we feel about it. And the energy inside of the Mandil ashram is so strong that as soon as you just walk into the ashram, you just breathe in such a, this huge, thick air of divinity that, you know, just takes you to meditative mode. So that is, for me, Puttaparthi is like Vaikuntha. And what does the Aradhana, what does it represent for me? It's a turning point for me spiritually because I finally was able to go inward. Before, I was always asking Swami, looking at Swami, just looking for the reaction. But when I kind of stopped doing that and started going inward, so I started doing meditation more. So that's what it means, I think. Sairam.
I wonder how in the world I wound up in India. You know, when I was growing up in West Islip on Long Island, I had no idea that my life would turn out like this. But, at one point in my life, you know, I read Yogananda's lessons, and I was sort of interested in Eastern mysticism, even though I was brought up as a Roman Catholic. And at one point in my life, I came into some trouble, and I didn't really know what to do about it. So at one point I said, God, deliver me into your love, right? So the next thing I knew, Sharon had come back from India because I used to shop in her parents' health food store. So I went there, and, she always used to say, peace within, just before I leave. So, you know, I walked into the health food store. She had been in India for a year, and I went there. And she handed me the book, Holy Man Psychiatrist. And at that point, after reading the book, everything seemed to change. And Baba started coming into my dreams. He started giving me bliss. He started making things fall off my wall. And he sort of gave us, gave me sort of like a honeymoon period with him. He paid a lot of attention to me. So many interesting experiences. And that was in 1983. So in 1985, I came here. And, of course, he called us in for an interview the last day that we were here. And the taxi was waiting outside. And he points to my wife and he goes, where's your husband? And she goes, I'm not married. So he goes, not married? So then he says, well, who would you like to marry? Of course, she points to me. And I said, uh-oh, my goose is cooked. And, things weren't always easy, you know, but somehow he made it clear to me that I would benefit by this relationship, which still isn't easy. But at one point I said to Swami, I said, look, you know, I don't think I'm a little bit over my head with this stuff, you know. He goes, oh, no, this is fine. You're doing fine. And, people talk about some of the things they had to work out. Oh, yes, so I'm so happy to be here. It's a workshop. It's all this great stuff. It's not so easy, right? But if Baba's not in your life, it's impossible to fill that vacuum with anything else. Once you find out about him, it's impossible to fill that with anything external, like a BMW or a typical religion or anything like that. But, I went through this thing, you know, would go to Sai Baba meetings, and, Baba would, you know, like, show you all your faults. I wouldn't be the person I am today if it wasn't for Baba. I'd probably be, more self-centered and not even realize it. But, when he left his body, you know, it didn't sit right with me. I didn't like it. I said, oh my God, the world is in such a mess and you're gone. You know, I don't believe he's gone. I think he's still working. I feel it that he's still doing things. Well, this is how Baba does things is always very interesting. There was one point where I wrote him a letter on all sorts of controversial things. And I said, well, I don't want anyone else to read this, so I signed my name Len, and I put my last initial W, period. At the time, I was reading a book on Padre Pio, a Catholic saint. So a day later, after I posted a letter, sent it out, I have a dream, and all of a sudden, I'm outside a church, I open the door, and there's Padre Pio. And I'm greeting him like this with my hands folded. I mean, this is how I greet Baba, with my hands folded. So Padre Pio looks at me, and he says, what is your last name? So what's interesting is Baba was saying that, I got your letter, okay? I know you're reading a book on Padre Pio, okay? And I know you didn't sign your last name. So I'm just confirming the fact that I received your letter. I know what you're doing. I know what your mind is. So to me, that's fascinating, you know, how Baba, you know, who could do almost anything. He seemed to defy the laws of physics and biology. It just, at least our understanding of those laws. There was another interesting experience that I had when I went to see a theosophical friend of mine, an elderly lady, for about 45 minutes. I used to keep all my business papers next to me in the driver's seat in disarray. And that was after I met Sharon. I was trying to clean my life up and pay back all the bills and all the money that I had owed people. So I come out of Margaret Geiger's house with a friend of mine. He was a Buddhist lady who married me and Sharon. She acted as the reverend. And my door, I was in New York, and of course I always locked my truck. So I unlocked my truck, and on my steering wheel is the very last bill that I hadn't paid. I said, how in the world did this bill, which is in a jumbled up mess next to my driver's seat, get stuck to my steering wheel? I said, that has to be Baba. There's no other explanation for why, and I've seen what he can do, which is beyond understanding. So he did that. I mean, he just keeps on doing things like this. Okay, so anyway, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Len Wojnow. I was born in Brooklyn. I was raised on Long Island. I was raised Catholic. And, of course, you want to know how I felt about Baba's last day here. I said, not good. I felt depressed about it, somewhat quite sad for a long period of time, and I don't even like to look at those pictures of him. I have pictures on my wall when he was young and vibrant. That's how I like to think of him. So anyway, here we are in India, and I'm still working that out. I don't know what the outcome would be, but the very last physical darshan I had of Baba was I said, Baba, how about some physical progress? And he looked at me right away and went, whoomp, his hand went up like this. He goes, oh, good, he verified that. There was another incident that happened in Psycho 112. A bird died in fright in front of me, fell off the ceiling, or off one of those pillars and died right in front of me. I say, oh, my God, a bad omen. So right away, Baba gives us an interview. Right, and I knew I was in for some trouble. Yeah, I couldn't really follow my sadhana for some time. And he didn't speak to me for a long time after that. I said, Baba, please no more dead birds. I don't need any more trouble like this. Right. So, some time later, years later, we have our own home here in Brahmanapalli, and I open the door, and a hawk flies into our house. And he's flying all around the room, and then finally he lands on the floor, and I say, don't worry, bird. I said, well, I better pick him up and put him out of the house. I mean, he might claw me, but, you know, so what? So I gently pick him up and, let him go. And when I thought about it, nothing happens in Prashanti Nilayam that doesn't have a deep meaning. So I'm saying, you know, what is the symbol of me freeing a bird from the confines of a house? I said, well, thanks, Baba. You know, I asked you for a better symbol than a bird dying in front of me, and you gave it to me. Thank you very much. You know. So I don't understand what Baba is. Baba is completely incomprehensible to me. You know, he's some form of cosmic Christ. I have no idea. You know, he's full of love, and he does all these incredible things that defy our understanding. So basically that's all I have to say. So, I mean, you know, the story's not over yet. I'm sure he's still writing it. Well, thank you. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear brothers and sisters, thank you for staying with us on Morning Glory on this beautiful Thursday morning, April the 23rd, 2015. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 16 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Tomorrow is a very special day for us in Prashanthi Nilayam and for the global Sai community. A solemn day, a memorial day, and a thanksgiving day. As the Purna Avatar, Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba left his physical form on April the 24th, 2011. Few moments ago, you heard from a sampling of devotees from all over the world who make Prashanthi Nilayam their home. They explained why they continue to be drawn to Prashanthi Nilayam and what Aradhana Day means to them. These devotees came from India, America, Canada, Scotland and Japan. And they represent a mere random sampling of the pan-India and the global community that arrives in Prashanthi Nilayam every single day. Yes, that is each of the 365 days of the year, to bask in the divine energy of the holiest of shrines on the face of this planet, the Mahasannidhi of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. And I guess now would be a very good time for me to remind you that you can also participate in the Aradhana Day program happening in Prashanthi Nilayam tomorrow morning from 8 a.m., that is 8 a.m. Indian Standard Time, by logging on to radiosai.org. We will be web streaming live all the proceedings from the Sai Kulwant Hall to keep you all connected to Prashanthi Nilayam, the seat of all things true, auspicious and beautiful. Everything that makes Prashanthi Nilayam the undisputed spiritual epicenter of the cosmos. Now before I leave you to enjoy my colleague Brother Bishop Rushdie's fleeting moments interview with Mr. Venugopal Part 2, I'd like to share with you a few stanzas from a special supplement that India's largest circulated English daily, The Times of India, published as a tribute to Bhagwan Baba on his 85th birthday on November 23, 2010. This was a four-page all-color supplement and it was titled The Universal Sai. And here are some lines from that tribute from Bhagwan's 85th birthday Times of India special supplement. I will quote them for you. If the human story is a tale of a search for a superior purpose, never before has the quest been more intense. If every age found its hero in a Rama, Krishna, Muhammad, Jesus, Buddha, Mahavira, Zoroastra, Guru Nanak, never before did their names roll off the tongue simultaneously with such ease, reverence and love. If lighthouses emerged in every era to guide the flow of civilizations, never before did a cosmic presence light up the ocean of global consciousness during and within a lifespan. If Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Christians, Jews, Parsis, atheists and agnostics adhered to their respective beliefs, never before did they recognize in unison the secular humanism underlying them all. If ever a role model shone like a beacon of love, never before was the presence embraced and extolled so unanimously by his contemporaries. If ever a master led by example, embodying acceptance, love, truth and honesty, never before was his message more critical for the survival of every life form on the planet. If ever a land proudly glorified its progeny, never before has Bharat Mata borne a son whose life sums up her infinite glory. If ever the letters SSS stood for his initials, never before have they so emphatically defined sacrifice, sacredness and simplicity. Unquote. Dear sisters and brothers, now, today, on the eve of Aradhana Day, if I had the liberty to add a few lines to this Times of India tribute to Bhagwan, I'd like to say, if ever a day called for renewal of vows, for rededication to a cause, for revisiting our life goals and priorities, never before has the mission called for an internal audit and a course correction more than on this Aradhana Day. The day when the avatar stepped out of the finite to assume his cosmic infinity. Jai Sai Ram. Over now to Brother Venugopal. This is the second part of his fleeting moments interview with Radio Sai's Bishop Prishti. Till we meet next Thursday, take care, please be well, and Jai Sai Ram.
to develop that inner connection with Swami, which is more important.
Exactly.
I mean, instead of trying to work out a strategy in the outward sense, what is very important is to have an inner sadhana than an outer strategy.
Absolutely. And I think it's a learning curve, you know. Curve. I mean, you first you strategize, then you you think you can catch his attention, yes. Then you try various things. I saw that with a lot of our student brothers also.
Sometimes you will be seemingly successful also.
Successful, yeah. and it is probably with a plan.
With a plan.
Swami does that because, see, when students try to develop their skills too, so that they can impress Swami, the important thing there is that they're trying to do something for God.
Yes, they're so developing that love for God.
So the term that Lord Krishna uses in the Gita, saying Sarva Karma Bhagavat Prityartham, that is what it is. And
yes.
And Swami lets you do that more and more. Because the more you're doing it for Him,
yes.
the better you become and the more,
yes.
the cleaner your
yes.
act becomes. So automatically it's a learning curve, there's no doubt about it. At the same time, He doesn't expect you to sit back and everything is Swami's will, I need not do anything. So He doesn't want you to be lazy also. So there are some people who use philosophy for convenience. And that is a wrong way to look at it. Do your stuff and you will know when to take it. So that's about you know, the power of prayer. And I often tell some of our youth members about the how much prayer actually matters.
Yes.
And the other things, there are some other things I learned subsequently as a student, and I'll probably narrate that when I come to the student part. I've not come to it yet. But I'll narrate that, because there is also a limit to pray for something. There is a difference between praying for something, praying for an interview, praying for this, or praying for that. And how Swami taught me that it should be only pray. There is no for. You know, you shouldn't be praying for something. It is you pray because you should pray. That's it.
Yes.
So that and He taught me that beautifully in His own way, like how He would teach many others. But then this phase of my life where I was with the youth team and into activity and interactions with Swami, that Swami subsequently blessed me with, it shaped my personality in the crucial years of my intermediate and engineering, where I kind of understood that there is a deeper purpose to life. There are, you know, you have to dedicate your life to do work for the good of society, for you know, for God, and the importance of all of this. And it got to a stage where I was thinking that, you know, there is the only thing that we should be doing in life is thinking about doing seva and nothing else. And then subsequently how I became a student is an interesting story. So I think it was in the year 99 when we were called for a group interview. So our team had developed, that time there was no, I mean, internet was not so widespread, and There were no softwares for the organization. So we used to maintain a blood database, blood bank kind of. Whenever there is a need in some hospital, they used to call us, and we would have our diary in which we will see who has which blood group, call that guy, call that person up, and, you know, request whether they can come and donate blood and so on. So we realized that there are some rules also to that. So after you donate blood for 3 months, you shouldn't probably be donating again. So we were ending up calling the same guys within 3 months. We wanted to avoid all of that. So we came up with the idea started as a software for blood bank, that it, which will automatically, you know, take out those people from the list who donated blood in the 3 months. Then it grew, the idea grew into an organization software. Why not do this for other things, like save other registration form and things like that. And so all of that also, some of these brothers were just in their engineering and just finishing their engineering or MCA, and they were kind of looking for jobs. So they had time. And they came up with this organization, this software for organization. Swami was really excited about it. I heard about it. He's doing something to develop an organization software. In fact, in Kodaikanal, he called the All India President, Mr. Srinivasan, and told him that, you know, you should have a look at this, what these boys are doing. And he told him to arrange for any kind of support that is needed. then subsequently, I think it was December of 99 that Swami called us for a group interview. When the software was complete, so Swami asked, is it all over? Okay, all of you come. So all those boys who were involved in that software project, Swami had called for an interview. We were around 12 of us. And during that interview, towards the end, Swami asked me, what are you doing? And I said, Swami, engineering. After engineering, what will you do? I said, Swami, whatever you say. Of course, in my mind, I had MS. Okay. Because all of my engineering classmates were giving the GRE exam and wanting to go to the US for MS. But I just said, Swami, whatever you say. Then Swami said, engineering tarvata, MBA chai. Engineering, MBA chala manchi combination. Ekkada chestavu? He was slowly leading to that. Okay, so he said, after engineering, do MBA. Engineering and MBA is a very good combination. Where will you do MBA? I said, Swami, anywhere, Swami, there are a lot of colleges, and I will apply for CAT. And Swami, no, do it here. Then I said, okay, yes, Swami, I'll do it here. Then Swami said, do it here, I will give you a seat, these colleges are for you only. So he was making it general also, he was saying, these colleges are for you people only, so you come here, I will give you a seat. This was, I think I was in my second year, engineering.
Second year engineering
was when he told me first. But I didn't actually take it so seriously also, but okay, let's see. Then subsequently, when I was in my final year of engineering, that time there was this engineer group interview. This was a different one. And that time again Swami asked me, what are you going to do after engineering? I said, Swami had already told me to do MBA. And again he asked, where are you going to do MBA? I said, Swami, you told me that I should do it here. Do it here, I will give you a seat. I said, okay. Then after my final year, what happened was that I gave the entrance exam here. I got through the entrance exam. But unfortunately, our results of the final semester didn't come out because apparently there was a paper leak. I mean, the papers got leaked in one of the colleges. So all the exams were cancelled and there was a re-exam scheduled in the month of August. In the month of July.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was in a dilemma because here the colleges start on June 1st. And I had given the entrance, I had cleared it. What do I tell? So when I went to the interview...
You were selected.
I was selected. Mm-hmm. I was selected for the interview, obviously. Mm-hmm. I got through the entrance, that is.
Okay.
In the interview, I told Vice Chancellor, sir, was there that time, S.V. Giri, sir, was the Vice Chancellor. I told them that... our exams are scheduled in July, so I will need a break during that time. And they were like, no, it is not possible. Because our exams are like 18 days or 20 days or something like that, with 2 to 3 days gap in between. So they said, it's not possible. Here colleges start on June 1st. If you are not able to do it, then you have to try next year. And, I then came to Brindavan. I thought if I get an opportunity, Swami was in Brindavan that time, so I came from Parthi to Brindavan. I thought if there's an opportunity, I should tell Swami about this. But I didn't get any opportunity. Swami didn't look at me in the darshan. And I went back and I started applying for CAT and started applying to some of the other colleges and all of that. In August, Swami called us for a group interview. In that interview, Swami asked, why didn't you join?
Mm-hmm.
Then I was about to say something and Swami said, naku telusu, I know exams paper got leaked. He himself told that. Yeah, exam paper got leaked, got postponed. What to do? Here our colleges start on June 1st. There is no, we are very strict with the rules. And he said all that. I thought Swami is feeling bad, Papa might let me tell him. And I told Swami, it's okay Swami, I've applied for other colleges, I will get through somewhere. Completely, I saw his expression change. His eyes went, opened up wide like that, and he said, what? And he said, inkoka chota apply chesamante kaalu varakottadu. He said, I will break your legs if you apply somewhere else. I was like, what? What is this? Swami said, do seva for 1 year, samvatsaram seva chey, next year seat isthanu. You do seva for this year, next year I will give you seat. And I was like, okay, which means what? 1 year I'm going to just sit and do nothing. And but Swami was very good. And then he said, you will join here on, you know. He was trying to doubly ensure that that the thought doesn't cross my mind that I should do something else. And I said, okay, Swami, okay, I will do as you say. And so after in that group interview this happened. And then after I came out of that interview, and another interesting thing that happened, and I should tell you this. So he was asking about the exams. So July the exams happened, August first week, I think it was 4th August if I'm not wrong, this interview happened. And Swami was asking, how did you write the exams? I said, I wrote okay, Swami. In fact, I had not done very well in one particular paper. The name of that subject was Internet and Intranet, and I had really, really done it badly actually. Swami asked, "Any exams baga rasava?" I said, "Ah, Swami, I wrote well. Bane rasano, I wrote well." Then Swami said, he looked up like that into the, or whatever he looks, whatever he was looking at, he just looked up towards the ceiling like that, and then he looked at me and he said, "One paper you messed up badly, no?" I said, "Okay, here's something coming." I said, "Yes, Swami, one paper, little, pass out, will you pass in that?" He asked. I said, "Swami, I don't know, Swami." Then Swami looked up like that and said, "It's difficult, but I will pass you with 4 marks." He said, "4 marks to pass chestanu po," he said. And that paper, that exam was given on 30th July. 4th August, this interview happened. And our results came in September.
Mm-hmm.
And in September, I saw that paper, the passing mark was 30. Out of 75 or something like that, and I got 34. So that was another, you know, it made me realize that, you know, it's all in his hands.
Absolutely.
It is nothing. But then he said, "I am passing you with 4 marks and so that is another nice thing which happened in that interview. Then subsequently, see, all this is before students, so student days. Subsequently what happened was that year, so this is, I'm talking about 2001. If you remember, Swami had let students go home for Gram Seva, during the Gram Seva time. So he had let students go home for winter vacation, and he had planned for Gram Seva also around the same time. So it was not compulsory that students should be there when the Gram Seva happened. He left it as optional. Many students went home, and what happened interestingly was he sent word through Chiranjeevi Rao Garu that ask Hyderabad boys to come for Gram Seva. Now, in the meantime, what I had done there was I had joined a company, because I didn't want to waste time, so I joined a company. The company was basically a call center, because 2001 was when the 9/11 happened and there was a software slowdown. And we were not getting software jobs, engineers were not getting software jobs. So instead of wasting time, I thought, let me join somewhere, and I joined a call center. And we were in training, it was still 1 month. The first 1 month, and we get this message from Parthi saying that Swami is asking Hyderabad you to come. And I thought, if he is asking us to come, I should be there. And I went to my boss and I said, I want 1 month leave. my boss looked at me like,
for which planet are you coming?
Yeah, exactly. And then he was like, it's not been 1 month since you joined. I said, that's okay, I still need 1 month leave. And then he said, what do you need it for? I told him, I'm going to Puttaparthi for Seva. He said, this guy must be nuts. What is he talking? He thought there must be some personal emergency or something. Then he said, no way, I cannot give you this leave. So I was mentally prepared for this. So I had the resignation letter ready with me in my pocket. I took it out and I said, okay, in that case, I'm resigning. And I said, hey, wait, can we talk? I said, no, it's okay. Anyway, I was not interested in continuing in a call center job. So I just said, okay, and I gave him the resignation letter. And I came away to Parthi with the team. That 1 month, so Swami put us in the kitchen and he sent specific instructions to Chiranjeevi Rao Garu to take care of our food and accommodation and all of that, because he specifically had asked for us to come. So all night we would help in cooking. morning the boys would go and distribute it in the villages, but whole night the cooking and everything was along with the cooks, the Hyderabad team was doing it. And this was the first year of doing Gram Seva actually. So everything was new. Gram Seva kitchen was new. And all, you know, cooking so many tons of rice and everything, the estimates, everything was being done for the first time. From the day we landed, every day Swami would send instructions, and that 1 month was amazing. I'll tell you why. So there were some startling incidents which happened. In the first 2-3 days, the pulihora that got packed actually got spoiled very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now pulihora typically is supposed to last longer, and nobody was able to make out why it is getting spoiled. So we were not cooks, so we didn't know what was happening. And Swami sent a message again through Chiranjeevi Rao saying that you guys don't know, but the cooks are actually mixing water into the masala. So what used to happen is that there is the way pulihora is done. In, I don't know. I mean, you probably have never had an interview where you'll get into the specifics of mixing pulihora. But the way it is done is that rice is first allowed to cool down completely. So once the rice is cooked, you have to wait for it to cool down completely so that it doesn't leave out vapor anymore and it is dry. And then you mix the masala, pulihora masala with that, and that's how the pulihora is made. So masala was made in big vessels separately, and the rice was being dried. Now once the rice is dried, the masala, you have to keep mixing that masala so that, you know, it becomes even. And then what happened was that these vessels were so big that the cooks were not able to mix the masala because it was getting solidified very quickly and it was difficult. So they mixed water into that.
Oh.
Now no one knew this. Okay, no one knew this. Only the cooks know, because we don't know about what is happening. No one knew this. Chiranjeevi Rao Garu comes with a message from Swami saying, he called the head cook and he blasted him. He said, Swami told me that you are mixing water. First the head cook denied it for the first 5 minutes. And then he broke down and he said, yes, we are not able to mix. That is why, you know, we had to mix water into it and all that. And then Chiranjeevi Rao Garu told him that, you know, because of this it is getting spoiled and this is not the way you should do it and all that. So then we had to get smaller vessels and break it up and then do the mixing and all that. But that was one incident where Swami, you know, sent a message and nailed the problem. Then on another day, there were complaints that the pulihora is smelling. And Swami sent a message through one of the senior devotees, lady devotees who's here in the ashram, saying that, you know, when you're drying the pulihora, so what we used to do, we used to lay mats and then we used to lay saris on top of that and then dry the rice on top of it. So he said, when you're drying the rice on those saris, when you dry it, that sari gets wet at the end of it, because all the water seeps on the sari. The next batch of rice that you dry, you should change the sari. What you're doing is you're keeping that, and that is why the bottom portion of rice is still retaining that wetness, and therefore it is smelling. Now look at the detail to which Swami sent instructions.
Wow.
Nobody would even imagine that, you know, he will give instructions to this detail, this level of detail. Then there was one day when Swami sent a message saying, tonight it will rain, so please ensure that all the firewood, so Gram Seva kitchen is like, you use firewood and all. Please ensure that all the firewood is put inside, because otherwise it will get wet. It will rain tonight and it will continue to rain till tomorrow morning 10 a.m.
Oh.
This was the instruction from Swami. Okay.
Oh my God.
So Chiranjeevi Rao
knows these Gram Seva stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the reason I'm sharing. This was every day there was something like this. Okay. And Chiranjeevi Rao Garu comes and he says that Swami has sent a message saying that, you know, it is going to rain. So please ensure that the firewood is all put in. So all the firewood was dumped outside. So immediately we had to start putting it in. You won't believe, brother, as soon as we pushed the last log of firewood in, it started pouring. And it started and it rained till 10 a.m. the next day. Chitravati was full. The whole entire Parthi was flooded. There was water everywhere. I don't know if you remember. This is 2001.
I was not in Parthi. I was in Swami's hospital in Bangalore.
Oh, okay. But that was a fantastic experience because it was almost like we were feeling like God. We knew when the rain is going to stop. We knew when the rain is going to... So we were feeling like, wow, this is what it feels to be omniscient, you know. And then we actually that trip, I remember at the end of the trip, we even went and swam in Chitravati. So we were like,
enjoy. Okay,
reliving the moments that Swami would have had in his childhood, yes, because otherwise Chitravati is always dry. Mm-hmm. So that experience was very powerful. Every day there would be some message. And then another beautiful thing was mornings, randomly Swami would just come in the car in the morning to the Gram Seva kitchen, and by that time all the brothers would be dead tired and they would have gone off and gone to sleep, but me and one or two of us, two or three other brothers, would wait, hang on till, if especially if we know that Swami is coming the next morning to inspect, we would just hang on. And that time it was beautiful. Swami would come and he would look at us in those dirty clothes, the tired faces, and then he would make gestures. He would hold his nose as though to indicate that we are stinking, and you know, and then he would say, go and sleep, like that. So all those moments were beautiful. Then there was another lovely incident with the Gram Seva kitchen thing that year, and what happened was that there were some other people who were also coming and participating in the cooking at night. So there was, during the night, what used to happen is parallelly Anantpur sisters would, in another shed, they would be packing also. And the next day, next day morning, Chiranjeevi Garu comes and says that Swami has blasted me that, you've not ensured that people cannot, somebody from outside cannot come here, you should ensure that. And then immediately, you know, we had to arrange for some kind of barricading so that people cannot just barge into that area and all that. So every day we would invariably get some message or the other. He sent so many people, he sent Raman Rao Garu, he sent Nand Gopal sir from Vrindavan to inspect some of these nuances that Swami had told, to ensure that is being taken care of. And there were times when Swami would say the next day they have made a wrong estimation. Instead of 30 quintal, ask them to cook 45 quintals or something like that, you know, to that effect also. So Swami would actually even say that. So all throughout that 1 month, very evidently we could make out that Swami was working 24/7 during that time, and the rest of us were only being given that opportunity. You know, it really felt like that Govardhan Giri. Yes. Swami keeps narrating that, you know, that,
yes,
I am like the Krishna who holds the Govardhan Giri, and all of you are like those cowherd boys who thought that maybe Krishna's finger will get strained and put sticks under the Govardhana to support him. So it is like that. All of our work is actually like that. So at the end of that Gram Seva, 1 month that we spent here, and finally Swami sent a message to Chiranjeevi Rao Garu that he will bless the team and that he will give clothes to everyone, and so he told us beforehand. Chiranjeevi Rao Garu came and told us beforehand, you sit as a group, Swami will come. And Swami comes and in darshan, and he looks at us and, oh, when did you come? And we were like, what? You've been here for a month, you've been sending us messages every day, and you come and ask, when did you come? So one of the brothers in front said, Swami, we've been here for a month. Oh, 1 month you've been here. What have you been doing here? Swami, we were helping in Gram Seva cooking in kitchen. Oh, you were helping there? Oh, nobody told me. Well, that is so typical of Swami. And then Swami said, okay, you all stand there, I will give you photographs. Now, why he said photographs was because the previous Guru Purnima he had announced that no more he will give Padnamaskars. So he started, there was some phase when he was, yes, giving only group photographs. So he said, I will give you all photographs, all of you come to that side. So we all went to the other side where the car shed, where the old students, alumni sit nowadays. So that area we went, and Swami came there, he took photographs with us. And then he said, you wait, I will send prasadam. And Swami went in. After some time, the brother who was serving Swami as one of the security boys came out and gave all of us packets of clothes, so safari pieces or something. And we thought that is it. So Swami was busy with some other interview, so we thought, okay, this is the prasadam that Swami said he will send, and so people went out. So whoever wanted to leave started to leave, and as people were slowly trickling out, we also came to the other side where people sit for darshan. And then suddenly Swami came out of the interview room, and from there he looked straight at me, and I was sitting somewhere behind. Okay, I could make out that he's looking straight at me, and he was indicating to me to come and sit where we were sitting earlier. So I got the cue. I immediately, whoever was there around me, I told them, let's go there. Swami is asking us to go there. And we ran. And Swami already started walking down the veranda. And as he came, one of the brothers also went out to catch hold of some of the others who just went outside, out of the gate. And as Swami was coming in, all of us were settling down and sitting and all that. So Swami came straight to me and he asked, have all these boys worked for the Gram Seva? I said, yes, Swami, all of us have worked. Then he said, I said that I will give prasadam. Where did all of you vanish? I said, no, I didn't know what to say, because we thought that the clothes that he sent is prasadam, it's done. Then he gave us all Easter eggs, and as he finished his round, completed with everyone and gave everyone the prasadam, he came to me and he asked, where are the others? So there were four or five other brothers who started off in another vehicle to another village. So there was a village where we were working as a model village project kind of thing. So I told him, I mean, they already left. So he gave me prasadam for them. See, look at his concern. First thing he asks is, have these guys worked? Who are these people? And then after that he comes and he actually picks people who left and gives prasadam for them. And then he asked me, hey Imra, job udle saiva, he asked. So yeah, what did you leave your job? He asked. And I said, yes Swami. And Swami said, what job? Adikuda ujjagama gudlagu billa ratri panjedam. Meaning, what it means is that also a job, you know, where you're working at nights like an owl? So, it was a call center job, and it was supposed to be a night shift. And I didn't tell anything about it to Swami, and he actually mentions thing about working at night, and had no need of joining any more jobs. I told you I will give you a seat. You do seva for this full year. Next year, come, I will give you admission, you join MBA here. So this was the fourth time he was reiterating that I better join there and not try any other stunts. And then he, you know, beautiful, so he also blessed me with a chain, and, you know, he gave vibhuti to all the brothers there. And the amazing thing was, at the end of it, and this was what really, I really remember very fondly, at the end of it, he looked at me with a lot of concern and said, you boys are coming for birthday again, no? Are you? Because it was already a month and it was end of October. And he said, "Puttupandakki vastar kada meeru, people will come for birthday also, no?" Like that. Because he was concerned that are these guys not going to come for birthday. But I said, and of course, Swami, it's an opportunity for us. Come. I tell everyone that I will take care of their leaves, no problem.
Oh, so I told that.
So he was like, you know, that is the beauty of Swami. And one of the brothers, during that interaction itself, during that, you know, outside this was, and one of the brothers said, Swami, we need your blessings. And Swami said, seva chestu unte blessings automatic ga vastu untaira. If you keep doing seva, blessings will automatically keep flowing. You need not ask for it. So, those are some of the very, very beautiful moments with Bhagwan. But I realized that he is very keen that I should join here, and I in fact, there was one time when I was trying to avoid him because I knew that he will keep asking me for and at the same time it was also a challenge for me, because at home parents were concerned that the year is getting wasted. What is this guy doing? They didn't know that all this is happening and Swami is actually driving me to join there, and they were thinking that I am wasting time. So I got counseled by everybody, by my brother, by my parents, by my cousins, by my uncles, and all of them were concerned that I am slowly becoming some sannyasi type of guy, and maybe I will run away to the Himalayas and all of that. So there were a lot of concerns that I had to address during that time. But then subsequently, and I have not shared this with most people, and in fact even my parents came to know of it much later. So what happened was, because of pressure at home, I applied for CAT and for XLR and some of these other institutes. And for me it was ringing in my ears that Swami said, you apply somewhere else and I'll break your legs. But still I had applied, and I didn't know how to get out of that situation, because what happened was that I got selected in XLRI.
Okay.
And I was really wondering what to do. This was in Feb, March, that I had to go there, go to Mumbai for the final interview or something. For XLRI Jamshedpur, they were conducting interviews in different cities, so I had to go to Mumbai for final interview. And I was wondering, how do I get out of this situation now? Because I got through the entrance, I have to go and give the interview. And in my mind, I was like, if I get through the interview, then it will be very difficult for me to convince my parents that I don't want to join XLRI, I want to join Swami's Institute. So I was wondering what to do. And the day before I have to leave to Mumbai, Swami comes in my dream and he says, are you going to Mumbai? Yes. So in the dream, it's like Darshan kind of scene, and he asks me, are you going to Mumbai? And I said, yes, Swami. Then Swami said, do you have accommodation there or should I arrange for something? Then I said, no Swami, my uncle stays there. I'll go to their place. Good. Go there, go around Mumbai and come back. So I did exactly that actually. I went there, nobody knew that I didn't attend the interview. Went around Mumbai and came back.
Oh my God.
And then obviously no call letter came home because I didn't attend the interview. So subsequently, I gave the entrance here. I got through, and I joined the summer course. So 2002 summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. And I think that was the last one. I think 2002 was I think the last one that happened when Swami was physically present. So I joined 15th of May or something. We had to report to Vrindavan, and I joined the summer course, and that's how I landed up becoming a student. But there is one incident which happened in the meantime. So I kind of got the vibe that Swami is driving me to join his college, which means that I will become a student in 2002. During this year, I was thinking there are so many brothers who not got an opportunity with Swami as a group. And so in the last opportunity that I had with him, I had asked Swami about all the other brothers who are very active today but have never got an opportunity with Swami. Swami, you should somehow bless them. So Swami said that, yeah, you select such boys and come, I will talk to them. So we came back and some of these newer boys who have never had opportunities with Swami and are very active with the team, we made a list and we started preparing for a visit to wherever Swami is. So by March, we were able to make a trip to... So we had, again, see, strategy. So we had thought, March is the time when students have exams, Swami will not be busy with students. So let's plan it to be in March. And we landed up in Vrindavan in the month of March with a band of 18 boys. So Swami had specifically told me to keep it under 20. So he said that if it is more than 20, it will become difficult for me to talk to everybody. If you keep it less than 20, I will talk to everyone. So I was very confident that he will call us for an interview. So as I went, at the same time, that is why sometimes you should be careful about what you want to ask of God. I used to often think, how will it be if Swami scolds? So till then, I never got any scolding from Swami. So I was always... so I was like, it will probably be a good experience to be scolded by Swami once, you know, like that. If Swami scolds someone, because people used to say that if Swami is scolding you, then it means that he shows that ownership on you and that he has the he has that extra love for you. All these various interpretations and theories were there. So one of the silly desires I had was that, you know, I should sometime or the other I should be scolded by Swami also. I didn't know it was coming with this trip, but what happened was that we landed up there, 18 of us. And Swami came in his darshan round and he looked at me and he said, how many of you have come? I said, Swami, 18. And Swami was like, what? 18? How could you bring so many people? I told you to keep the group to a sizable, small size. How could you? I thought Swami heard it wrong. In my mind, I was thinking Swami heard it wrong. Maybe he thought it is 80. I said, Swami, no, 18. Swami Padyamdi. In Telugu, I told him it's 18, not 80. Swami was, he didn't care about what I was saying. He just went on with his, he was extremely upset that I brought such a big number. And he said, this is what I don't like about you. This is very bad. You told me that you will bring a small group. You lied to me.
Oh my God.
And I was wondering, what is going on here? And he was yelling in darshan. This is the first time I was seeing him. And I can tell you that was not a pleasant experience at all. I was shivering. And his eyes were bloodshot. He was red. And he looked so angry. And I was literally shivering and I didn't know what to say, what to respond. Because till then I had only seen Swami as, you know, that Bangaru Lau kind of facet of Swami. And then this, he just kept on yelling and he said, I will never call you again for any interview. This is very bad. I don't like such, he said, I don't like people who lie like you. And all of that. And then he walked some 4 steps ahead. And some boy from behind in our team, I don't know what came over him. He got onto his knees and he said, from there he's shouting and in a louder tone he was telling Swami, Swami, we have not done any mistake, Swami. And Swami, now that guy had yelled, Swami should look at him, no? Swami looks at me and he says, this is what I don't like about you.
Oh my God.
I was feeling I'm getting booted for no reason. I'm getting scolded for no reason. And then Swami said, this is what I don't like about you. He said, I will call even the worst of sinners, but I will not call people like you who lie.
And oh my God.
I thought, this is it. This is the last interaction I'm having with Swami. I got that kind of a feeling. And then, and what really amazed me was the next moment, he turns, Padmanabhan Garu used to walk behind him in darshan in Vrindavan. He turns to Padmanabhan Garu with a very broad smile. The eyes, that color has changed. His face, the expression has changed. All in a split second. And he says, Vala, the cancel aipoyindi. Aurugwe group ni pampichu. Which means, I have cancelled these people's interview. You can send that Uruguay group for an interview. So he just spoke to an Uruguay group, a group okay. Which had come from Uruguay. Uruguay is one of the countries. So he had just spoken to them. And he came to us and spoke, and spoke or rather showered us with with all his blessings like that. And then he turned around and very lovingly, there was no semblance of the mood that he expressed when he was talking to or rather shouting at us. I was thinking this is only possible for him. He's a master dramatist. And then the Uruguay group went for an interview and we obviously were not called for an interview. The next day Swami even avoided coming that side. He just walked the center carpet up and down and didn't look at us. So we came back and I was kind of dejected because this was March and I was
to return.
Yeah, we came back to Hyderabad. So then we stayed for another day and then nothing happened. So we came back. And then, so I thought, okay, all of us have lost opportunity. Forget about all of us losing opportunity. This has also become my last interaction. And because Swami has told me to join his college, it means that he will not talk to me anymore and I will just be there for 2 years without any interaction. So this was what was in my mind. And I joined, subsequently I joined in May for the summer course. And during the summer course, Swami saw me a few times, but he didn't speak anything. So I thought, this is how it is going to be. The next 2 years, I have to bear this.
You felt it was better as a Hyderabad.
Yeah, absolutely. More so because I never wanted to become a student. I mean, in fact, there was another boy, remember, in our team who was very desperate to become a student. And Swami told him, no, don't apply, don't join here.
Oh.
So we were like the two ends, and he made me do this and made him do that. So that's where it is. And I only just landed till the summer course now. There's a lot more.
I know. So we have to see how it panned out after that, after you became a student. And well, it's been such an insightful journey. So I think I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that, you know, he made this happen today. And what you have shared today about the interactions and the lessons of life that Swami has granted you, I think everything is so pertinent. I think this is something which every youth should listen, you know, anyone who comes into Bhagwan's fold and wants clarity in life about what they need to do in life and how to work for Swami. I think all the tenets that you have shared is something which is absolutely precious. So I really look forward to continuing this session. I know it would be even more beautiful when you became a student. Everything in some sense was a precursor to you becoming a student.
It's all part of the learning,
part of the
learning experience.
Yes, yes. I think in life, whatever we meet, we know till then what was happened was only to prepare us for that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then that continues. So thank you so much, brother. Mm. And hope that when you are in Parthi next, you'll have time again. And I will not tax you this much, but at least we'll record something and we'll continue this documentation of beautiful moments at the feet of the Lord, living with the Lord. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, brother.
Salam.
Tune in to Sight.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Allah Akbar. قدرت کے سب بندے एक नूर ते सब जग उपजियारा कौन भले को मंदे कौन भले को राम हरे हरे नाम